Our topic for this afternoon is how to have an effective dorm meeting. And even though some of you are working with servicemen, there will be principles here that I trust will be helpful to you. First of all, let me start out by saying the idea of a dorm meeting is scriptural because it takes the gospel to the marketplace. And I would like to remind you of Acts 17, where we have the apostle in this situation. I'll just read down through here to give a little flavor to what we're going to be talking about. Now, while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was stirred in him when he saw the city wholly given to idolatry. Therefore, disputed he in the synagogue with the Jews and with devout persons in the market daily with them that met with him. And there were two kinds of philosophy there, the Epicureans and the Stoics. And some said, "What will this babbler say?" Others said, "He seemed to be a setter forth of a strange God, because he preached unto them Jesus and the resurrection." They took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, "May we know what this new doctrine whereof thou speakest is, and thou bringest certain strange things to our ears. We would know, therefore, what these things mean." And so this is the experience on Mars Hill where he speaks, and he explains to them the resurrection of Jesus Christ. He takes the gospel message of the resurrection of Christ to the marketplace. Now, I'll just say this in the beginning. There are many other effective methods of reaching students. In fact, there are a number of methods that are more effective because it's easier to build relationships in some of these other methods. And I'll mention other ways that are effective as we begin today, just so that we can keep our topic in perspective. In winning students, probably like winning anyone else to Christ, a friendship relationship is the most important thing, especially to those of us who are concerned about making disciples. Because across the lines of friendship, we can interact on the basic issues of commitment, and it really helps us going on into follow-up. We have evangelism where two men go out together. This is a very effective means because the audience is composed of one person. You can find out what he thinks, and it's more effective than a speaking situation where there are 20 or 30 and all the people don't have an opportunity to interact. A non-Christian study group will say we have book one and five or six men where they're investigating the New Testament. It's also very effective because we can educate people to the things of God. And you can meet, say, 4 weeks. This is the way we use it. We meet 4 weeks, 1 week on each lesson, and the fourth week is an individual interview, and we go in and ask the man if he would personally like to receive Christ. Other means of friendship evangelism. A dorm meeting, I will first of all define it. I would say it's a bull session, maybe structured, maybe very loose, where the gospel is presented by an authority with an opportunity for dialogue with non-Christian student, and the authority's intent would be to gather interested students for further investigation of the faith. Or he may want to present the gospel individually to people who indicate interest. So this is an initial encounter through which the gospel is given to interested people, either in that group, or you may use this group as a can opener, as a beginner, in a pool of manpower to later on contact them individually. The gospel's presented by an authority where students are gathered, and we are trying to filter through the interested from the ones who are not as interested in commitment. First of all, I think when we think about having something like this, we should check the objective of the area. What is our present objective? What are we working on in our area? Do we need to concentrate on follow-up? Let's say we have 20 or 30 new Christians. Well, in such a case, the dorm meeting wouldn't really help us as much as maybe a little seminar on how to grow. So we need to check our objective of that we're presently working on for the semester before we decide whether or not to have the dorm meeting. There are also, secondly, there are certain times that are lend themselves to a dorm meeting. For instance, in preparation for this seminar, I had five dorm meetings, and in January, right before finals on a semester basis, that's not the best time to have one because nobody would even interact with us very much because they're thinking about finals and so forth. But if we're beginning a work, if we're just starting on a campus or we're having a foray over to a campus and we want to find believers, it's very effective in order to find believers. It's also very effective to use a dormitory meeting in order to reach some men for Christ initially. That is, in the first stages of the narrow work, when we need to do evangelism, it's a very effective way to get the gospel into a dormitory or a pool of manpower and believe that God will bring all the interested people to that point where we have set up shop, so to speak. And the third checkpoint, is the attitude toward the administration. We need to know our attitude toward them is right, and we need to know their attitude about whether or not we should have such a meeting in the first place. I might just say a word there. We have made it a practice of informing the dorm directors. Usually a student does this, but the principle we operate on is we inform the man of the lowest denominator, lowest rank. If it's a dorm director, then go to him. There's no reason to go to the dean of men if you're going to go into one dorm. And if a student goes, it looks like the normal kind of meetings that they have. Students have different kinds of meetings. They have meetings on sex, and they have meetings on Vietnam, and they have meetings on race. Well, if an expert on psychology is going to speak, he doesn't go. He doesn't have time to go. So a student goes. So when we go in to speak, or you're setting it up, a meeting up for the regional director when he comes through, which is one of the things we used to do a lot of. When Jack would come through, we'd set up a meeting for him. If you send the student, it looks like the other meetings that they have, and he just wants to be informed. He doesn't have any, normally doesn't have any objectives, any objections. One time at Ball State, we had a dorm meeting, and a Roman Catholic dorm director was there, and I did go that time and tell him what we were going to do, and I showed him the book that we were going to use. Boy, he said, this is great. And usually in those situations, I just drop a little hint about we're helping to motivate men to do what's right, and instead of going by rules, we're trying to get to the inner man, and of course they respond to this because they know the rules won't keep them from getting drunk and tearing the dorm down. So that night, we went till about 2 a.m., and the dorm director was in serving coffee to our guys. We had about five guys that are speaking, and here he was running around serving coffee to us. But it was really a wild one, and they're not all that wild. But anyway, it's good to inform this man. It's a checkpoint for you before you begin. Okay, let me just give you some objectives that may be accomplished by the dorm meeting. A, to establish a witness in the dorm. We pray over a dormitory, and we believe God to bring all the students that He's interested in reaching to that particular place. Let's say it's on the fifth floor. Okay, we don't try to hit every floor, but on the fifth floor of a 10-story dormitory, we have a meeting. Well, I always feel that God is able, because we've made a little stand for the gospel there, God will bring people in that dormitory that He wants to hear the gospel. They may read a sign, a fellow student may tell them, and other ways they get there. It helps us to get started on a campus often, too. I know Tom Buzzard went over to Western Illinois, where we do not have a representative, and he ended up in a bull session, and it gave us a little feel as far as our initial witness to the campus. B, to find inside men who are believers. If a believer reads a sign that says there's going to be a meeting on Christianity in the fifth floor, he'll come. In fact, I've had I've had non-Christian or Christian students, excuse me, I've had Christian students to send a tape. One time when Warren Myerson and I were working out at Colorado College, this student couldn't come to this dorm meeting, but he came over and he dropped his tape recorder and he said, "I want to be sure to get this on tape, and I'll come back and pick it up." But it really brought him out of the weeds. See, to reap where we have been witnessing individually for some time, to help us to reap where we've been going in. Let's say we've been going in two by two into a dormitory on our campus. It will help us to reap some of these contacts who Leroy mentioned this morning, who had heard the gospel, who have not yet believed. And so that Joe Christian can bring his non-Christian buddy who's seen the gospel, he's heard the gospel, and now he has an opportunity to hear an expert, we'll say the regional man, present the gospel in his dorm to his other buddies. So this is real helpful. They hear the gospel in a new way under this third, under C. They hear the gospel, the same gospel said in a different way by the authority or by the speaker. It's also a conducive atmosphere to dialogue with non-Christians. He sees answers to questions. The non-Christian notices that there are answers, and this encourages him to make his commitment. And D, to give new Christians an opportunity to let their friends hear the gospel. To give the brand new Christians who live in the dorm an opportunity to bring their buddies to something. We have a dormitory at Urbana where about 8 fellows have come to Christ since September. Lauren Sandy had a dorm meeting there where he spoke back in October. Well, I just had another one in January this year. Well, mine was completely different than his because since he delivered the gospel there in October, about 8 fellows have received Christ. We have a total of about 10 or 11 fellows in that dormitory. Well, this time was a very mild meeting, but the reason was because these new guys were bringing their buddies. And the young Christian comes and he hears the gospel and it helps him to become firm. And he nudges buddy, and it's the right time for him to get it. So they can bring their friends. Okay, so far, then, we've covered the description of a dorm meeting and the objectives that are best accomplished by it. And I remind you once again that that it's not the most fruitful as far as number of men coming to Christ, but it can be very effective in accomplishing these objectives I've just mentioned. Let me mention one thing before I go into the how. What I think I enjoy the most is the spontaneous meetings that happen rather than those that are all organized and set up. I remember one night, it was Tom Buzzard's first night in Madison, and Madison's quite a wild campus. There are a lot of long hair and leftish type stuff going on. And Tom had been working in Chicago with blue-collar workers or men who were out in the industry. He came to Madison. We were up on the 13th floor of a high-rise dorm, and two guys were sitting in the lounge, and we just went in and started talking to them. And one of them punched the other guy and says, "Hey, go get so-and-so." So he went out and got this guy, and then pretty soon they said, "Hey, go get so-and-so." So another guy went and got him. And the longer they sent for him, the worse they got. I have never been completely whitewashed like I was that night. I mean, one guy got up on the back of his chair and he was sitting on the back like this. He said, "Which way is east? Let's all fall down and pray." You know, and another guy said, "Let's kill all the Christians." You know, they were yelling back and forth. And we must have had 20 guys in there. And they yelled at us. And finally one of them said, "Shut up! Let them talk!" But they'll side in with you. You know, it's really interesting what happened. But Tom was sitting there, you know, he wondered what in the world he got into. But I really liked those. They were really fun. because you never, there are no rules, and you can't do anything, but if you give the gospel, it's right. And it's interesting how, well, that's the way they get into it. See, a bunch of students in a dormitory that get into an all-nighter on religion, that's the way it's a happening. It's nobody plans it. It just happens. So if we can be there on at that time, we can be very effectively used. One of our fellows who's in on a campus at Indiana University, we found him through one of these, and looks like he's going to be going with the NAS. But he was a Christian and not getting any help, and I had one of these meetings. And I went around that time. I said, why don't you guys tell me what a Christian is? So they went around. They gave all kinds. And on his answer, he said, well, a Christian's a man who has received Christ. I said, where did you ever get that? Said, well, it's in the Bible. I said, where? He said, I don't know. And went on to the next guy, but it really challenged me. Afterwards, boy, he flew into me. But that's the way we found him, was in a bull session that was set up by another guy, and it was more or less just a happening. It wasn't any planned deals in a room, about 17 fellows. Okay, how to have one. How to have an effective dorm meeting. Before, I've broken this down in a true navigator fashion. Before, during, and after. If you want to keep notes. Before. This may be more like a precaution, but decide you are going to do it and that it's worth the time that it's going to take to do it right. By this I mean we should see it as an opportunity to train our fellows in platform, and that we should be willing to take time to train them and to do the thing right so that Jesus Christ is honored and it doesn't look like we're flying by the seat of our pants, but we do know what we're doing, and we are good representatives of Christ when we get to contact with the non-Christians. Two, prayer backing. We have our girls praying in the area. We have the ladies in prayer at the same time that the meeting's going on. We have every student send cards out to their friends and ask them to pray before the meeting starts, because we're involved in God's work, and God brings people to Christ as a result of prayer. So prayer is very important. I also now have started something else, and that is that I expect the Christians in the dorm to get together and to pray. The believers. I don't care if they're 2 weeks old. It's that inside element should be together in prayer. Message preparation. This is point three under before. Before, message preparation. What we'll do today is we'll write a little message and for a dorm meeting in this workshop. If we have the time, I think we will. But I usually write three or four messages ahead of time so that I don't get pressured, where you have time to think. Like when the God is dead philosophy was brand new, I made up a message on God is dead. And I worked on this message. I got a lot of good stuff out of Time magazine. It's not very difficult. But whatever the students are talking about, figure out what it is that you can say to that point, whether it's a race riot or Dow Chemical or whatever it is that's going on. Try to come up with a message that presents Jesus Christ into that situation and really get the ear of students. I usually spend time in the Word before I go into a dorm meeting. I spend time in prayer for the audience and for the Christians and for that meeting. Your message itself should include several things. I have a little list here. I'll just read them off to you. A, student jargon, I call it, or student terminology. You ought to talk like students talk. B, it should contain the gospel with emphasis on the resurrection. I remind you of Acts 1. 2, 3, 4, 5, chapters 1 through 5, that here we have four times mentioned they preach the resurrection. And boy, today the resurrection is really an interest to people. And that, I mean, it's something that can become an interest to them because they don't hear it. And it's that which makes Christianity different than all the other religions that they gab about. C, I include evidences of the faith. I don't use the word proof, but I do use the word evidences. For instance, one thing I love to use is similarity in personal testimony of men that have become Christians. I usually refer to Luther and Augustine, men on different sides of Christendom with similar effects of Christ in their life, like forgiveness or confession of sin. There are things that run true in all Christians for 2,000 years. This is an evidence. If you see footprints on the bottom of the sea, you know somebody's walked there. Well, if every man who receives Christ said, I have eternal life, I have assurance of forgiveness, and I know that I have purpose now in my life and joy, this is an evidence, and the non-Christian needs this pointed out. D, I always put in how to become a Christian. Now, there's different thinking on this, and it may not be that in every situation this would fit, but I feel that I should tell them how to become a Christian. And this is something that I developed just when Lauren Sanney was there, and I picked this up then. But E, set the tone for your questions. The way you end your message, if, at the end, when you're coming down to the close, say the how-to is right here, how to become a Christian. When you're coming into the close, you can set the tone for the questions. I assume we have questions. I just love question sessions. Maybe that's, some people don't have questions, and you don't always have to have questions, but you can set the tone for them. For instance, at an Andrew dinner the other day I was preaching, I preached on how to receive Christ and talked about having coming in. I said, okay, now are there any questions on how to do this, how to ask Christ to come into your life? Well, boy, that really, that's the extreme of being here. I wouldn't do that in a dorm meeting, but I'm trying to give you the idea that you can set the tone. Does this bother you? Do you fellows have any questions about how Christ can be real and relevant in your life? But if your talk's philosophical and you don't present the gospel, boy, you'll get everything from how long the boat was till you don't believe in Genesis, which is, you know, just idle chatter. They can do that without you being there. So you can set the tone for the kind of questions you get. Okay, I'm back now to another point on before. Those were things on the message preparation. Student jargon, gospel with emphasis on the resurrection, evidences of the faith in the lives of men who have been saved, how to become a Christian and set the tone. Okay, now back to what to do before the meeting. I inform all the people involved in the meeting itself. Okay, there are three different groups of people involved in having a dorm meeting. This is the way I normally do it. I have a meeting team. One is the MC, two are the testimony, and the speaker. That's four men. Then the prayer band may be the ladies over in an apartment, and the follow-up team include the men that are going to have the non-Christian Bible study or the men that are going to go in the next day and talk to students individually about how to become a Christian. So all these people need to be informed. Now we'll say Joe here represents the inside man. Well, I would have him on the meeting team. Now if he's an older Christian, I wouldn't do that to a brand new Christian unless I had him pass out cards at the door. I'd involve him some way. But I wouldn't let him MC or give his testimony, probably, if he were brand new or if it's on his floor. I don't like to make it awkward for a guy on his floor. If it's on another floor, I'll take him up there and have him give his testimony. But normally I don't have a guy give his testimony on his own floor because there are guys he hadn't talked to yet that may come up natural. But that's just the way you can do it that way if you want. And the follow-up team, which will include this man also, who's the inside man. Now what I do, let's say we've got six of these going on. Let's just continue the illustration. Let's say Mayhall's coming, Jack Mayhall's my regional director. Let's say he's coming November 9 to 11. We're going to have six dorm meetings. And this is number one. Okay. You can do a lot of things to inform people, but I make up a master sheet showing each meeting, what time it is, and which people are involved in that meeting, so that everybody knows to come to the big poster board and get the word. And then you make little cards. I make little cards that are in replica or copies and give that to the people in each one of these teams. So they've all got the word. They know what time it is, and you have to work at this. But for it to come off the way it should be, you have to work on communication. Okay, also before the meeting, train the men individually for their parts. Well, let's just take this ministry team. MC, testimony, and speaker. It's very important to know that your speaker will deliver the goods. And where it's another navigator fellow, you don't have this trouble. But if you ask a pastor in, or a teacher, a faculty member, be sure that you know that he's going to deliver the goodies, because it's too much work to get there and not have the message delivered. And sometimes it's wise to ask those men to speak. But I'm on my track here is that we have a navigator man coming in. The MC should be told what to say, and you should hear him say it. The testimonies, the safest thing is to do is to hear it. You can hear it with a tape recorder and have him listen to it again to make sure he'll say it the same way. But you need to cut out the terms that are offensive, like saved or whatever other term that might not be appropriate. And you need to hear this man give his testimony in a way that will help non-Christians to become a Christian. Another point you can do before, you can have a dry run with everything but the message. You can have the guy stand up in his sport coat, the way they're going to look after they've got their haircuts and all this. And you can actually go through the dry run. I did this when we were having dorm meetings at Muncie. Bob Davenport from Taylor, a coach at Taylor University, used to come down and speak. And before he'd get there, he used to fly in about 3 minutes before the meeting. But I'd have a dry run. I'd have a dry run with our fellows. Okay. Another thing, go over all the details with the men. Tell him about the dorm, social chairman, the dorm director. Tell him how to dress. Be sure they've got 3 by 5 cards. We'll use 3 by 5 cards in an invitation. Be sure you have the books. We'll take books along and show them which books we're going to give. And double check the room an hour before the meeting starts, just to be sure. It's natural for dormitories to have these meetings. There are places, in fact, where I have ministered that they want the students to have 2 meetings of an educational nature a semester. So often you can just walk on the floor and say, who's the social chairman? And the guy will tell you, you go down there and say, well, I got this speaker coming to town, and he's really good. He speaks on stuff that students like to hear. Would you like to have such a speaker? Man, he'll jump in your pocket because he doesn't have to do any work, and it's free. Well, we have seen those fellas make the signs, pass the word, and set the chairs up, get the meeting ready, and the whole works. Now, I always send our guys in, though, to invite guys as a double check. I may or may not tell the social chairman that, but the social chairman or the education director or education chairman, either one of those guys, usually not the president, he didn't want to mess with it. And I had one social chairman at Carbondale this semester. Bob Sheffield was going to speak, and I was just looking the thing over, and this great big non-Christian fellow went down through the dorm telling these guys about this meeting, and it was a panic. He'd go in and guys would be shooting the breeze. Hey, you guys, we're going to have a meeting on Jesus upstairs. You better come on up. Say, hey, said you guys down here in this quarter, you really need this. Now, come on. And I went along with him, you know, just on purpose to see the feedback and to get all the good scoop. Boy, it was really funny. But he was doing his job, and he went to every door in that dorm. He's going to get us a crowd. So those are good experiences. Okay, during the meeting. This is B under how to have a dormitory meeting. Arrive early and talk over the strategy. Two, check the room for physical setting. Sometimes it's good to have it a little dim. It doesn't need to be all lit up. Three, pray on the ground. Joshua 1:3. We've already prayed, usually during our dry run, before the meeting. We've prayed together with the men going in. And then we'll pray on the ground of the dormitory. I think it's important. Four, greet the men with enthusiasm regardless of how many come. Doesn't make a difference when only one guy comes in. Be enthusiastic, be glad to see him. Five, give out the 3x5 card at the door when they come in. Six, be yourself if you're speaking, and be at ease. Now the order of the meeting, this is during the meeting still, the order of the meeting, this is the way we handle it, that you can change these things around. The MC starts out, and he explains the 3x5. The thing they want to know is, what am I doing holding this card? So you tell them. And usually we tell them that this is something you can jot down questions. The man's going to speak on Christianity, and you may have some questions, and you can jot this down. Then we have another purpose for the card later on, and we'll explain that to you then. That gives them a little temporary answers to why they're holding 3x5. Identify with the students, compliment them some way. I spoke in a girls' dormitory the other day, and Jan Dunn was at Northern Illinois. Now she's down in Urbana. And she said, I'd like to give you girls here in Lincoln Avenue residence a compliment. She said, I have to deliver this because I'm the only one that heard it. And she said, I've noticed, too, that there's something special about the girls in LAR. They call it LAR. She said, when I came to this campus, I got in a taxi cab, and the taxi driver drove by here, and he said, boy, you know, he said, I hear all kinds of things in this old hack. And he said, I've noticed something special about the girls in LAR. And he said, they're really nice girls that live there. And so she told him this. See, oh boy, you know, they really swelled up on that one. So some compliment or something you know about the type of student or live there really helps to get the thing on the right foot. Then give the facts about the speaker, be warm, be certain, give the name of the topic, and set him up. If you MC a meeting, be sure you set him up. Don't make him have to scratch to get started. So give the topic right at the end of your little talk and tell how he knows about this and he talks to students about this often. Then the speaker should go probably 15 to 20 minutes. 20 minutes is probably maximum because you can't keep their interest. The idea is to stimulate their thinking, and then it's followed with questions. Now, we used to do it this way. We used to have MC, testimony, probably two, testimony, speaker, questions. But the thing we found recently we like the best is to have MC, speaker, questions, and then in answer to some question, call on somebody to give their testimony. It's really effective. They know that there's some friendlies in the crowd anyway. And I remember when we reached Fred Klatt, Fred became a Christian in a dormitory where we had a meeting. Jack spoke. Rod Beidler was living there. He was out of Boulder with Dean Trogue, and he came to Madison for a couple of years. And Beidler had this dorm meeting, And Jack was speaking, and after he finished, he opened up to questions, and there were 35 guys there. It was a good meeting. And so one fellow asked a question. He said, "Larry, why don't you tell him how it happened to you?" So I just gave my testimony. And it seems to be better, not so artificial, and if the testimony is wrong, you can really kill your speaker. Because they judge the speaker, see, by what the kid said. If the kid's green and he hadn't done this very much, he could blow the war effort for the speaker. So you really put your speaker at a disadvantage, I think, if you make him follow some young Christian who's just getting started. But to have it bubble out of some guy, just as spontaneous, well, you tell him. It's a lot, it seems to be more normal and natural. But anyway, we've tried every combination. This seems to be the best. This is under questions. Now we're down to questions. I just explained to you why we put the testimony later. We have the guys get ready. We hear them just the same. And we hear them before the meeting just the same. And I just did this the other night. I had a young fellow, he's a medical student, give his testimony. And in answer to the question, it was before the questions in that meeting. But it was helpful to have him follow me. Under questions, heated questions may really help you. If it gets really hot and heavy, it can help you because people who aren't Christians will side in with you. The kids have been brought up right and are polite. They know that they wouldn't yell at some college prof. And when, you know, you begin to lose your hair a little bit, you get that older look about you, they begin to get a little respect for change. You know, when I first went into student work, the guys would say, "Do you go to school here?" That was when I was in Muncie. And then I went to Madison, the guy said, "Are you an instructor here?" And to show how I've aged, before I left there, I knocked on this door one night, and the kid had evacuated. He left. He ran away from school. And I didn't know that at the time. And I said, "Where's Joe?" And the guy said, "Are you his dad?" I said, "Shut up, smart aleck." That's encouraging. An old man can do student work. Don't become defensive. Keep your cool. Boy, so they chew it up, and so they tell about the fact that these principles of sacrificial death are in every religion. Just let them. Don't become defensive. Another thing, let students rescue you. If you pause and some kid jumps in, it may be good for him, and he'll come to your rescue often. Someone will. If you don't know, say, "I don't know." You can also jest with them if it fits. You can crack a joke or call their bluff, and they love that kind of thing. I've done that a number of times. I remember Sandy sat in on one about God is dead when he came to Madison in February 66. And I pulled one of those things in. Some kid asked me a question. I said, "Well, you know, you know better than that." I said, "That's really not the way it is with you, isn't it?" Something like that. They just, you know, then the other guys hee-haw him, because they know what he's like too. They live with him. You can also use questions. You can fire a question back. Remember that Jesus did this all through the Gospels. Okay, during the meeting, point 8, invitation. Now they have the card, and usually before I stop speaking, I explain the card. Before we go into the questions, right here, I explain the card. Between the end of the message and the opening of questions, I usually let the student who emceed handle these questions. I let him be the moderator, and he retranslates them for me. I don't try to stay on the center of the deal. I usually sit down, and I don't carry a Bible. And I have a New Testament with me in case I need it for reference, but I just sit there and talk. I know my talk well enough that I don't use any notes. I saw a man one night in a fraternity meeting. He pulled a chair up and he had his notes there like that, and I felt it was a real disadvantage. So I don't use any notes. And I don't have an open Bible out. I just sit there and talk.
How about another book or a minor translation?
To have alongside. Yeah, you could have your notes in. I think if you refer to it a lot, I think it's a disadvantage. But another book, you mean like a binding, like a Phillips? Yeah, that might be all right to carry that. The idea is not scaring them away, but I try to know it well enough that I memorize the outline. Then I explain the card with numbers 1 and 2. I say, if you guys are interested in knowing more about how to become a Christian, if you'll put a number 1 on your card in your room number, we'll see if you get this book. And I hold up Stott's book, Becoming a Christian. I say it's written by the chaplain, the Queen of England, and it's written for college students. It's very helpful. It's helpful to me. And if you want this book, you just put a number 1 on the card and throw them up here on the table afterwards. And then 2 is an investigative Bible study. And I take book 1 and I show them book 1. And I say, this will be 4 weeks. And it's very helpful. A number of students on campus are doing it. And it will be an opportunity for you to look in the New Testament and see what it says for yourself. And that's really helpful while you're going to college to get to know something about the New Testament. And I joke with them, in fact, they don't know anything about it. And I say it's for 4 weeks. It takes a little preparation and it meets for about 45 minutes. The fourth week, as I said before, is for individual interview. So we explain the card and then go into the questions. After about 45 minutes, I give a natural stretch break. Let them get up and leave. Say, well, why don't we? I suggest to the guy heading up the question that I'll say, why don't we take a break? You know, this meeting's only supposed to be an hour, and I think we ought to stop it and let these guys get out. And I give some kind of a shift so they can get out if they want to. Some rooms, I never sit next to the door. I always sit away from the door. So if the guys want to come in, come and go, they can without being spotted. I always sit over here in this corner. Something like that.
Excuse me, Larry. Did you
sure.
Say you had 4 choices in the card or 3?
Just 2. 1 is the how to become a Christian, and 2, the investigative Bible study for 4 weeks.
What about individual
interview? That is, they take the booklet to them. That's the individual interview. We take the booklet to them. We deliver that with 2 men. That's the follow-up team's job, is to get all those books out in a day, the next day. You might arrange the Bible study right there. When they come up and say, I'm interested in this Bible study, and then you look at them and you see you got 3 other cards, just get them together right there and set the time while the pitch is high and while they're really interested. And or you might have to go individually and find them and try to set up a time. It's very difficult if you wait. Now, also, the invitation will depend upon the objective for the meeting. For instance, if you're trying to give your guys, your young Christians, an opportunity to bring their friends, then I probably wouldn't give an invitation. I would tell them ahead of time, now you guys, afterwards, you pair up with these guys. So you may not want to control that invitation. So that depends on why you're having the meeting. But if it's initial break-in and you're breaking the ground for the first time, it may be a good idea. Are there any questions on the meeting? I'll come back and give you an opportunity for other questions. But any questions right here?
You said you had the MC field questions for the speaker.
Uh-huh.
Is that awkward at all? You guys asking
them
that?
No.
Eventually work back, the speaker's just...
It hasn't been. In the situations, the reason for that is he's committed himself for time. This may be the dorm social chairman.
Oh, I see. That's not necessarily your
man. It may be. Usually it's our man. I had Paul Anderson do this the other night. It helped to have him there because all the guys knew him and he was a man. I don't think it's ever been awkward. In my city, maybe somebody else has had that to be a burden, but I haven't. It gives him a chance, see, to cut guys off who are long, or to choose guys who get to ask before you stop, and you don't have to make those decisions which could rub a guy wrong. Like, yeah, you listen to that, my question was too hard. So you miss that part. Any other questions on the meeting?
You said you don't use a person on the floor necessarily for testimonies. How about the MC? I mean, if you use your own man, would he necessarily be living on that floor?
I've done it both ways. He could be if he's well known. You know, everybody knows he's a Christian. He's been there, say, a year or so. I'd say no problem then. The attitude I was referring to, or the principle I was trying to get at there, Jerry, was I think it's wrong for us to overcommit a guy who hadn't had a chance to win his way in the dorm. They still think he drinks or he's brand new and he may be able to do more friendship evangelism without our putting him up in front of everybody and saying he's holy. You know, that's the way they read it. It's not so much that we say that, but they may read it that way. But I'd say if he's been around a while and they know him to be a Christian, it'd be fine to use him there. In fact, that'd be the best place to use him, probably. I try to use them all, as many of our guys as we can in these things. I'll have two guys passing out cards, one guy MC, a couple guys get their testimony ready, a couple guys running around the dorm getting guys there. Okay, after the meeting, collect the cards, that's obvious. The men should scatter out and witness. And I don't know, I get tired many times of teaching the same old thing, but boy, this is something you got to teach every time. You never don't ever assume this. Maybe I'm a poor teacher, but I have to go with this every time. Guys will come up and ask me some question about the message or one of our guys. Or they'll get together and talk about what a great meeting it was and let the non-Christians go out the door. And boy, that really turns me off. So I always tell them, boy, grab somebody afterwards. And I'll go around and break them up. If they get bunched up, I go get them in the boot and say, hey, let's get out and get with it. Grab somebody. Then we meet, third, prayer and praise back over the meeting. Praise God for what he's done and pray the names of fellas, questions they ask, that they'll become Christians. Four, go see each man who wanted a card and share the bridge with him. Each man who wanted a booklet, who signed a card. Now there you can go back to the number ones, or you can also go back to the men who wanted in the Bible study and give them the bridge too. Five, set up a Bible study in the dorm for those interested. Pick a time, let them pick their room and have it in his room, in a non-Christian room. Six, inside Christians carry the responsibility for further witness. I like to plant it on their lap. This is their dorm. It's not mine. Okay. Now, any questions on when to have it, why to have it, or how to have it? That's basically what we covered. I described it for you. I talked about objectives accomplished by it. And then I talked about how to have it before, during, and after. Any questions? Charlie?
I'd like for you to restate the definition you gave for dorm meeting.
Okay. A bull session where the gospel is presented, by an authority with an opportunity for dialogue with non-Christian students. The intent is to gather interested students. The intent is to gather interested students for further investigation of the faith. That'd be an investigative Bible study. Or to present Christ individually, to those students who indicate interest in further conversation. Jerry?
On your after the study, I was just wondering, do you sell the Bible studies or give them?
We sell them at the first meeting.
All three sessions are a whole book or what do you use?
We sell a whole, we've been using the whole book. We usually, some of the guys will, when they deliver, they'll deliver, you know, before the meeting so they prepare and they say, oh, this is 50 cents. But we used to tell them. Well?
One thing that we did in this dorm discussion at PPI was we just had for a half hour long, and the whole objective was, or not the objective, but the point of it was the afterwards, you know, where they pair up and everything. And I just wanted to think of that, just that short message and then questions, and they're all asking you questions, and you just cut them off with maybe about 10 minutes of questions, you know, before they really get hot, and they're just right there at the peak.
You break up and then go into what they say.
You break half hours up, you know.
Yeah.
And you're only taking a half hour, so you get a lot of guys out.
Yeah.
And you just break it off after a half hour, and then all your guys are in there. And they...
That's a good idea. We did that. I was on the beach with InterVarsity, and that's what we do at Fort Lauderdale. We'd play music, get a whole bunch of kids around, and then... we'd go just right to the peak and then break, and then everybody'd scatter out and witness. That's a good idea. One of your points is it's easy to get kids to come for 30 minutes. Yeah. Good.
Another question is, what would be some good topics to put out? I was thinking of what would be the advantage of having a topic on post-quarter. How to become, or what is a real Christian? Something that's more direct rather than is Christianity credible or things like that. You think that something like what is a real Christian that is rather direct with the idea of bringing out guys that are more interested. Just a direct approach. I think that that has merit.
Any other thoughts on that? We've always gone the other route. Maybe one time we used that with a hootenanny. When we advertised the hootenanny, we did that. It was direct, how to become a Christian or something like that.
I think it's a lot like Christians who've never gone witnessing have kooky ideas of what it is to witness. And until they go for the first time, they really don't understand what witnessing is. And usually they have some weird idea of you know, standing on a guy's chest or cramming something down. So, and non-Christians have weird ideas on first when you get direct on personal questions. And I think this sort of, for this reason, this turns away a direct question on the poster because they have a weird idea of what it means. What is a real Christian? I think for some reason they, their own lack of experience with this thing frightens them away. They think it's a sawdust trail or something. So you almost have to use a movie title to get them.
I'm saying another topic with Olivia, something like this, how to live the Christian life in college. Something like that, because I think a lot of guys come to college, especially freshman dorms, that want to, you know, they realize they're embarking on their own life, you know, and I think they're not interested in going to all this other party stuff and everything, you know, and to get those types of course, you might get some off.
For sure, in a pretty different type of school, it is too.
Barry, can you find any special time of events, late in the evening, early in the evening, right after dinner?
We use two times, right after supper, 6:30, and 10, usually 10. And when the guys sell it, they say this is a study break, or this is right after supper before you go get study. I tell you something we're finding on... 2x2 evangelism is that Saturday afternoon is the best time we're finding to do it. Because guys will take a longer break. See, Monday, we've been doing it on Monday, and I'm beginning to rethink that because, see, the whole week, boy, there it is. And they got tests, and they got papers, and they're thinking of study. They've been playing Saturday and Sunday. So on Saturday afternoon, they're just sitting there, you know, they're lonely, and I guess, sure, they got history to read, but, you know, what's an hour? They're going to take it anyway, whether you get it or somebody else gets it. They may take a nap or... So we're finding guys really give you more time on Saturday afternoons. Interesting little discovery we just made. We stumbled onto it by accident and getting to capitalize on it. But those are the times best for dorm meeting. Do you have anything, Noel, that you'd like to add to this that I've forgotten or left out?
I'd like for you to elaborate on your tone of your message and the tone of your leading questions, which are antagonistic but well asked. A serious intellectual problem. Maybe two questions asking, and your tone of your message, maybe you're going to get into that if you're going to write a message. But I need help on this myself. I feel it's important to help. Or the presentation of the gospel as a broad view.
Yeah.
And make it current. That's one thing you said, but there must be some other things there. You can tell us how to make this effective gospel presentation.
What I do, Noel, I make the assumption from this point on that it is authoritative, it is true, and that they want it. I make that switch. I don't tell them, but I... So from this point into the how-to, I'm instructing them how to do it just like they're going to do it. And so then I talk about repent. Now, I may not dwell on these for a long time, depending on how wild the bunch is, but repent, receive, and surrender, I use there. And then on the questions, I might lead out with, well, I know a lot of you guys have thought about these things before, and the thing we want to do is really help you to know how to make this work now and how to have Christ in your life and have it to be a satisfying experience. Something like that, to just enough of a hook, and you could make one that would be natural to you, but just enough to send a vibration through the air that'll mean I'm not going to talk about Genesis. Now, they may or may not. It depends on the dorm. You know, we found in co-op farm houses, I don't know what to call them, co-ops, I guess the best word, but the alumni who go out and work in agriculture buy this house and then their sons live in these houses. That's what it is. And it's kind of like a fraternity, you know. You have to call to get the guy to come down, and they got the big gate up and a lot of activities like a fraternity. Well, those guys in that house at Urbana have the assumption that Christianity is right, and they want to know how to make a commitment that will cause them to be productive and successful as Christians. And so in that case, we had three of those, and the tone was, boy... How can I do this? So I've tried it before, but how can I make it stick? You know, I didn't last very long as a Christian. But and in that case, we were kind of expecting a hostile approach. But if you can learn about what the guys think and whether or not they are wild, how many wild ones are there, you can just ask the guys who live there what kind of guys have come. Some guy went into this dorm where Lauren Sandy spoke, Illinois Street, and they said, if you don't know Jesus Christ, you're going to hell. And they told him that, see. Boy, they said, what about the Jews? They're going to hell. See, and man, they preached her straight as a poker. So when Sandy walked, we didn't know this. The guys didn't feed us. And when Sandy walked in there, and of course, they had a little sign over on a curtain. There was a curtain in the couch, and they had a sign that says, the Israeli block. The Arab-Israeli block. Boy. But, you know, I had talked to him in the afternoon about this very thing of tone, and he did it so beautifully. He said, well, this is my experience. And my experience is Jesus Christ has given me peace. But his attitude, you know, was so blameless, and so gentle with them, they completely disarmed them. And afterwards, after the question session was over, they told us what they were going to try to do to him, but he didn't let them because of his attitude and the way he handled it. Boy, But anyway. And I don't know why I got on that track before. We talked a little before the meeting, and I had never really thought about it so much until I got in that situation. But I talked to him a little about tone, and then in that case, it worked because he stayed on his own experience. He still got the gospel out just the same.
How many guys usually show up? Very funny.
6 to 40. The best ones may be small. It really encourages a Christian guy who lives there to see us go in, you know, and interact with the guys that he lives with. They really can help him in believing.
This would complement some sort of weekly evangelism that you might have in the dorm. Do you feel that it's a really effective complement? Is it effective for getting the message out, for getting new names, for banding the team, or for all three? In other words, are the results worth the time?
I'd say only when we started, only at the initial start of evangelizing a dorm. It does get you names, and if your fellows are having trouble getting going, it encourages them to do witnessing.
But if you're having effective First United evangelism, you're getting good warm contacts every time you go out to Paris, this would not necessarily
happen. Yeah. The only way I'd use that is if we needed to start another dorm for some reason, say we found a couple of Christians, and we wanted to let the team work over there, let a ministry team work over there, I'd use it that way to get a witness in there.
Could have used the situation like Russ mentioned this morning, where guys are getting a little stale in a project, even though there might be no evangelism of fruit.
Well, yeah, you can use it instead of driving 40 miles down the road, just take a dorm where you're not working and you can use it that way. I would say on banding a team, not necessarily. I'm warned. I don't see that it has any real, unless the guys need help on platform, and then it can. If they need help on how to talk to people and how